like to convene the Ways and Means Committee, and as we announced last time we met, the first item on the agenda tonight will be the LCCMR bill. But before we get there, we do have a quorum, and we have the minutes from March 18th before us. Representative Kahn, you're shifting papers there. Did you read the minutes?
Yes, they're excellent. I move them.
Okay. Representative Kahn moves approval of the minutes for March 18. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. For people in the audience, Ways and Means operates under the assumption that the testimony on these bills has taken place in the previous committees, but as far as members of the committee, if you have a question and we need to have some buddy from the general public or one of the agencies or something answer a question, feel free to ask. That's the way we generally operate with the committee then, assuming that the testimony took place in other places. So the first bill up tonight is House File 1113 by Representative Wagenius. So Representative Wagenius, if you could give us an update on the bill, and then on this one, there I think are going to be three amendments authored, and if you want to begin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is House File 1113, and I would move the bill and recommend it be passed and sent to the General Register. These are the recommendations from the LCCMR.
Gene, pull your mic up.
Yeah, if you could, we're having trouble hearing.
Okay. These are the recommendations from the LCCMR, Legislative Citizens Commission on Minnesota Resources, and with me is Susan Thornton, who is the director. And so I want to tell you first off that I was not on the LCCMR when these recommendations came about. These were done when the Republicans were in charge, and Representative Hackbarth, I believe, was in the chair. So what I am going to do is just tell you a little bit about the finances, not go into a great deal of detail, but if you would like detail, I will give it to you. Okay? The value of the Environment Natural Resources Trust Fund on June 30th, 2012 was over $614 million, right. And the amount that can be appropriated each biennium is up to 5.5%. The recommendations here are for $38 million. Part of it, you'll see, is for aquatic invasive species, and that is for both 14 and 15. These recommendations were level funding levels, and the bill were adopted by the LCCMR in November. The committee that I chair, the Natural Resources Environment and Finance Committee, did not change any of the recommendation levels of funding. There were some language changes, which we can talk about, mainly making the money more accountable, and that's what we were working on. There were 169 proposals requesting a total of approximately $155 million. 46 were chosen. So we have six groupings of dollars for natural resource data and information, which is a traditional thing that the LCCMR funds. It was over $8 million, 21% of the appropriations. for land, habitat restoration, and recreation. It was almost $14 million, which is 35% of the money. For water resources, almost $4 million for 10% of the money. For the aquatic and terrestrial invasive species, it was almost $11 million for 28.7% of the money. For environmental education, it was $636,000 for almost 2% of the money. And then there's the administration and contract agreement reimbursement for a little over $1 million, and that's 2.9% of the money. And with that, members, I would be glad to answer questions, go over each individual project as you wish.
If it's all right with you, Representative Wagenius, we'll take maybe questions generally, and then we'll take up the amendments. So are there any questions at this point about the LCCMR bill? Okay, well, seeing none, then I should ask Ms. Thornton if you had anything to say at this point. You're available for questions, is what I assumed, or did you want to say anything? I know you put in a lot of work on these bills.
Mr. Chair, just for the record, my name is Susan Thornton, Director of the LCCMR, and yes, I'm here for any questions now or as the bill progresses.
Okay.
And if I could, Mr. Chairman, say to members, this is the LCCMR has an absolutely terrific staff, and if you want answers to questions having anything to do with natural resources, I suggest you go down to the ground floor, from here to the ground floor, and visit with them, because you will get answers to your questions.
And having served on LCCMR, not currently, but for a number of years ago, a while back, I would concur with your compliments about the LCCMR staff. They do an excellent job. The amendment I happened to pick out is the H1113A9. I think that is your amendment.
Yes, and I would like to move that amendment. And for this one, since it's a pretty technical one, I would like Ms. Thornton to explain to you why it's come in and come in late.
Okay,
Mr. Chair and members, this is a technical amendment to two of the appropriations for which there will be, for which the United States Geological Survey, USGS, is a part of. And this is purely for to aid the contracting. The section cited in the statute is the one in the trust fund statute regarding payment of or copyrights, patents, and royalties. And because the federal government does not copyright or patent things, it is contrary to contracting law for them. And so we've had a problem in the past where it's held up the contract. So this simply states clearly what is fact, which is that the federal government would not be subject to this section.
Okay, any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. The next amendment, as I understand it, is also an author's amendment. This would be the H1113A7.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to move that amendment, and that is on page 32 of the bill. And you will notice that lines 1.4 and 1.20 are already in the bill. So even though the amendment is written as a delete and add, that part of the language is already in the bill. What is coming in new is something that we put on the Heritage Outdoor Heritage Bill, and we're just going to make them compatible. And this says that prior to acquiring an interest in land with an appropriation, the recipient of the appropriation must submit the most recent tax assessed value of the real property. This is just a little bit of accountability so the public can see not just the dollar we're spending, but what the tax assessor thought the land was worth. And that's all this does.
Okay. I want to make sure we have the right motion before us. I'm told that the amendment that was distributed didn't reference that it was the first engrossment. So we're Representative Wagenius is moving to amend House File Number 1113, the first engrossment as follows. So just so we've got it technically correct with the motion. Any discussion on the amendment? Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to clarify, Representative Wagenius, the first part of what looks like we're adopting really is already adopted. We're just doing subdivision 2, correct?
Right. Just technically, it was done this way, but you'll look on page 32 of the bill, and you'll see that language already in the bill. So the new language is lines 1.21 to 1.24.
Thank you. There's Mac for that. Okay, any further discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. We have another amendment that's the H1113A10. I think that's going to be offered by Representative Kahn. Is that correct?
Yes. I'd like to move adoption of the amendment.
Okay. The amendment is before us. Representative Kahn, if you would explain the amendment.
Yes. It was very good to see in the LCCMR bill the adoption of this new practice of conservation grazing to improve wildlife habitat on wildlife management areas. It's clearly one of the most positive things we can do. The problem with the amendment as it's written is that, and you know, it may not need changes as dramatic as my amendment, but the language of providing infrastructure and discussions of what the provision of that infrastructure is turned out to, and conducting maintenance and building infrastructure. This is something, and maybe I can ask Ms. Thornton for help to see if I'm wrong, because I did chair it for a while, and I was on it for a long time, too, but building infrastructure is something that we just don't do. It really seems to me that when you look at the Environmental Trust Fund language in the Constitution, that it's really against the Constitution. And so the thought, the real difference of between the difference, I think, between what's in the bill and the amendment I propose is that the amendment I propose would certainly allow temporary infrastructure. It would not allow permanent fencing. And permanent fencing is a real problem, I think, that would conflict with the Constitution and LCCM, that gives us the money for LCCMR. And so I think, you know, I did talk with some cattlemen who called me about this, and one of the things that we said is that this bill has a ways to go, and we could tweak the language any place, either by putting this amendment on and tweaking that or afterwards. But the concept of building a permanent infrastructure for something like cattle grazing, I think, is just not possible under the constitutional amendment. And maybe Ms. Thornton could answer a question, have we ever done anything like this before? An LCCMR bill that you know, or an LCMR bill?
Mr. Chair, members, Representative Kahn, there have been structures, yes, funded or partially funded. We have not funded this type of infrastructure.
Can we have Representative Poppy?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to speak in opposition to this amendment. This amendment was heard in the Environment, Natural Resources, and Agriculture Finance Committee, which is the committee where the jurisdiction really would be with regards to this concept, and it was defeated there, heard and defeated. Certainly conservation grazing is an important management tool for the grasslands, and it's something that's seen as very purposeful and certainly is not something that we want to deny our cattlemen from being able to have access to the lands. And it's important to have fencing because you can't have the cattle grazing and without having that containment. So you have to have the fencing in order to be able to contain the cattle. But I do have a question for the Cattlemen's Association, if we have someone here who would be able to answer that question.
I think there may be somebody. We did hear that there was somebody that would be available to answer any questions. Is that the gentleman coming forward, I take it? Okay. Representative Poppy, as he's taking his seat, and if you could identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, for the record, Joe Martin. I serve as Executive Director with the Minnesota State Cattlemen's Association.
Okay, Representative Poppy, your question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Martin. Thank you for coming down to testify. I just wanted to understand if I'm misunderstanding, but I think that the cattle that would be grazing on these lands would need to be fenced in order to actually take care of the grazing that they're intending to do. Is that not correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Poppy, absolutely. We've been in very long-term discussions with the DNR, constructive conversations with the DNR over the last several years about using conservation grazing as a management tool. And we've had a lot of discussion about what's the right way to do fencing. And we've sort of been all the way through it of having, you know, producers pay for fence. But just as a, you know, for those of you who aren't too familiar with the cost of fence, a strong perimeter fence costs $1.50 a foot. So you're talking significant amounts of money. So if you're asking a cooperator as a grazer to pay for that, then they would expect a long-term lease. And we didn't want to go into having long-term leases. We didn't think that would be the best. We didn't want to create that entitlement mentality. So it'd be better that for the state to have that investment in building that strong perimeter fence, because we don't want cattle. We want to contain them in areas. We don't want them getting out in roads. We don't want them trespassing on private property. So this was really a joint effort with DNR that we approached LCCMR to make the recommendation. And I think really you can't be for one without the other. You can't be for conservation grazing and against fencing, because the two really go hand in hand.
Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and again to the testifier, I appreciate that comment. So it is something that you want to be able to continue to do, is to have conservation grazing on these lands. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Poppy, absolutely, and we want to work cooperatively with the DNR. We know that the primary purpose is to enhance that habitat on these lands and improve soil quality, but the benefit that we get as cattle producers is we want to put the most weight on cattle with them on grass, because corn's expensive. So if we can extend some of our grazing time, and especially work with for ranchers to be able to put out some cattle on some of these state lands, they can in turn take their cattle off of their private lands and rest them so they don't get overgrazed, because we don't want to see overgrazed pastures either that can have environmental impact.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think one more question is just regarding the grazing. Certainly it's good for the cattle, but it's also good for the land. And could you just describe how conservation grazing and rotational grazing works on the land?
Mr. Martin.
Mr. Chair, Representative Poppy, there's conservation grazing has been taking place in the state for several years. I believe the DNR has, I don't know the acres right now, but they've been grazing. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service actually led the way as government agencies in grazing their federal lands, and I know that also the Nature Conservancy is grazing a considerable amount of those lands. But to the benefit of conservation grazing under a management plan, what you really see is, as I know you've been familiar with conversation about invasive species, that conservation grazing is an excellent tool to manage invasive species on lands, and we know that we have invasive issues on state lands, and we struggled with how the state to pay for those. So grazing is an excellent tool. But the benefits you get in addition to invasives control is having cattle out on those lands, and there's been several studies that it's showing it's improving the soil health, but it's actually improving water infiltration. We want the water running into the soil, not off of the soil. So there's been numerous studies. I'm by no means a biologist. That'd probably be a better question, but I'd encourage, if there are any of you interested in this, there are several sites around the state, whether it be federal lands, state lands, or Nature Conservancy, to get out and take a look, because it's pretty amazing what can be done with conservation grazing. But the roadblock we run into is the fencing issue, and so if we really want to use this as a management tool, we need fence.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to the testifier. I again encourage people to vote against this amendment. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Breton. Representative McNamara.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to ask the witness a question.
Okay, while he's still there, then okay, yes. Representative Kahn.
Yes, sir. Are any of the fencing and any of the conservation is it all permanently established, or is any of the fencing temporary fencing?
Mr. Martin. Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, I believe most of the federal on the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, those are permanent fences. I think part of it is we get caught up on, we're talking about permanent fences.
Right.
Nothing's really permanent. We're not like putting concrete out there when they're pounding fence posts in and running wire. It could easily be taken out if need be. So when we're talking about permanent, we're really talking about a structurally sound fence, of posts and four wires to make sure that livestock aren't going to escape and cause problems on private lands or enter into roadways and whatnot. So to run just, to say, an electric wire around these lands really aren't going to safely contain livestock.
Well, Representative Kahn.
I think the question, though it seems to me, and I admit I don't know very much about the process, but it seems to me that one of the things that you want to do with rotational grazing is rotate it. So you want to be able to move the fencing. I do completely appreciate the value of the conservation grazing, but I do think that part of the principle of it is you want to be able to move it from place to place, that you don't want to permanently turn it over to, you know, a farmer for a place to only have cattle. You want to also be able, and specifically in terms of maximizing the effect of it, you want to be able to do it on multiple places, not just one place. And that isn't being done in any of these other processes. They're not.
Mr. Martin.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, in terms of the temporary fence and how it's worked in past instances where they're being grazed, so the perimeter fence we're really talking about is that basically around the edges of the property line of having that structurally sound fence, and then that be the responsibility of the unit of government or the land owner. In moving forward, what we're looking at is it makes sense to rotationally graze. So it would be the cooperator, the grazer's responsibility to actually install the temporary fencing inside of the perimeter fence. So we're not asking for, the temporary fence is relatively inexpensive, that it's reasonable to ask the cooperator to pay and put that up and move that fence within those paddocks. But the issue still comes back down to needing that initial investment in the perimeter.
Okay. Representative McNamara, you were up next, but I think Representative Houseman has a question of the witness. Was yours of the witness? Okay, Representative Houseman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I found myself humming the song from Oklahoma, Can the Farmers and the Ranchers, Can They Be Friends? And I think that one had to do with the conflict between the two groups and the fence. And but in this case, what I was humming was the farmers, or the ranchers and the hunters. I had to lean over to Mr. Sullivan and say, don't we require that all wildlife management areas are open for hunting? And so, I mean, we're really talking about that use of wildlife management areas that's been traditional and a totally different one, which requires a fence. And I'm wondering, we invited the rancher up to the table, whether the whether the hunters have a point of view about putting permanent fences on wildlife management areas where they will be hunting.
So did you have a question?
Well, I don't know if he's...
I don't know if there's anybody that would represent any of the hunting groups in the audience or not to take a question.
They seem to be very different uses, and fences would serve very different...
The amendment was posted for several days, so I if see. They had been interested, that was why we delayed it from Monday until tonight. So if they wanted to testify, hopefully they would have been monitoring the posting. Okay, was that it then?
I mean, if nobody...
Apparently there isn't anybody
No one's ever...
Yeah. Okay, so Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To Representative Kahn, I'm not sure what we're trying to do here. This is clearly a policy to allow us, to you, the chair, this is something that the hunting community very much supports. This is a good thing. This would allow cases, we have a real challenge with control burns, to always be able to get all the control burns we like to do done on wildlife management areas. And this is another tool in the toolbox that can be used on a limited basis, where we would have a wildlife management area that we would actually use livestock to graze to have the effect of like a controlled burn. We can even use them to control some invasive species on the land. There's some weeds and such that the cattle will actually eat down. And as Mr. Martin testified, what we're talking about here is potentially, if you just take it as a square section of land and say it's a wildlife management area, the perimeter may be partially fenced today. This would allow it to fence the rest of the perimeter, and then the producers, who we would get paid from in a lot of cases, would come in and graze different sections, intensively graze the different parts of the WMA to the benefit of the WMA. And then we would control that so that we would still be able to hunt it and use it in a practical way. The idea, and Representative Wagenius, I think it's interesting, you don't want to take credit for this bill. I can't take credit, but this is probably the best LCCMR bill that has been ever done. This is a terrific bill that Representative Kahn mentioned that in your committee, and I seconded it there, and I certainly want to make mention here. This is a fantastic bill. Spends $38 million for the kind of things I would argue very much that the lottery money is meant to be used for. This is a terrific bill, but this amendment's a bad amendment, and I hope members will vote no, because this money needs to be used to put the fencing in for this tool. This is an innovative policy. That's the other thing, Mr. Chair. This is clearly a policy amendment, but we can have the discussion here. I think we're going to have it again on the floor no matter which way the amendment goes. But this is a neat thing, and it's the kind of reaching out things that LCCMR has been known to do. And sometimes they hit a home run. Some haven't been so good, but this one could really work, could save the DNR some money, could bring us in some income from the cattle producers and get hunters and cattlemen. And this is a barbed wire fence is what we're talking about, or it could be temporary electric fence in certain situations. But in the WMA, most WMAs used to have fence around them from the old days, so we're used to crossing the fence, and this would be making sure we have a fence that works. And I think this would be a really good policy, and I hope folks will vote no. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, any further discussion? Seeing none, then, all those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
No.
Motion defeated. That's all of the amendments that the chair had. So Representative Wagenius renews her motion that House File 1113 be recommended to pass as amended and placed on the general register. Any further discussion? Seeing none, then, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
Thank you, Mr. Chair members.
Yep, thank you. And what I'd like to do now is turn the chair over to Representative Simon, because our next order of business is the budget resolution.
Thank you.
Representative Carlson, would you like to move the resolution?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I would move adoption of the CSRES-04 resolution.
Okay, to your resolution.
And members, what I'd like to do is walk you through the resolution, which, as we all know, sets the targets for the various funding committees in the Minnesota House of Representatives. So if you want to follow along with the budget resolution, beginning with education, the proposed House target would be $15,727,480,000, or another way of putting it would be a $550,200,000 increase for education. Higher education, the proposed House target is $2,715,262,000, and that would represent a $150 million increase in higher education. The tax is a minus $1,471,882, and that's the net impact on the general fund. And if people have questions on that particular one, when we get to the end, perhaps Representative Lencheski can cover that, or Mr. Marks could cover that as well. Health and Human Services, the proposed budget target there is $11,212,473,000. That would be minus $150 million. The Environmental and Agriculture Committee would have $362,658,000, or a $23,000 increase. Notice that the agriculture subtotal would be set at a base or a proposed number of $79,150, which is an increase of
millions.
Yeah.
Millions.
Excuse me.
At 3 zeros.
Yeah, I'm I should have been speaking of millions. Excuse me. I don't want to shock the environmental and agriculture people. $362,658,000, or an increase of $23 million. Makes a little more sense there. And then the agriculture subtotal would be $79,150,000, and that would be an increase of $1,590,000. So you feel better about that, Representative Poppy? Okay. And Representative Wiginius. Transportation, that's $160,000,050, and that would be minus 20. And the judiciary would be $767,580,000, which would be a plus of 30. Public safety would be $1,137,299,000, for a increase of 49.5. We're talking millions here. Jobs and economic development, $135,176,000, for an increase of 46. Housing, $98,000. 96 and 22 million increase. Commerce would be $78,212,000 for the target, or a $5 million increase. State government would be $921,368,000, or a $26 million increase. And then the Veterans and Military Affairs subtotal would be $170 million, 4,000, and then that would be a 9,300,000 increase. Capital investment would be 1,582,086, and it would be an increase of 61,496. Claims, pensions, and other bills will be set at 52 million. The dedicated revenue spending would be 190,000. Cancellations would be 20,000 for a total net spending of 116,972,000. So that would be the House budget resolution, and if members have questions, feel free, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Carlson. Representative Abler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I have to go upstairs pretty soon, so I wanted to go early. I don't see Representative Huntley here, so I can't ask him questions. He's probably upstairs chairing the committee. I'm going to. I just wanted to, I was pretty surprised when the governor came out and had a very lean target. Actually, there was a positive amount, but the total funding for HHS under the governor's budget was minus 69 million from all funds. And I thought, well, that's interesting. He raised $3.7 billion, and he provides almost the most minimalistic bit of money. And I thought, well, that won't hold up. This can't be true. I expected you would raise somewhere around $2 billion, and you're up to $2.4 or so billion, plus whatever fees get added on, which I suppose we'll talk about after I'm gone. And actually, the number you're putting forward here is 237 million dollars below the governor. I'm just making sure you understand that in terms of general fund, which is not a fake number. And I had the I call it a privilege of serving as chair the last 2 years. We wound up reducing spending by about $1 billion. And if you remember, the word hellacious would be a polite way to say how that was. It was very difficult. And I'm just telling you, expectations in this department are not for a reduction. And the mindset 2 years ago was way different. We had $6 billion. People were begging to be left alone, only cut us a little, cut them, don't cut us. I mean, there was all this fear. There's none of that now. And I'm just going to caution you what you've gotten yourself into here. And I thought, well, the Senate will certainly save us, and they're $2.8 million below you. I just want to remind you what kind of bills have come to our committee. 5% COLAs for nursing homes, 5% COLAs for the disabled, sex trafficking housing for victims of that, drug rehabilitation, mental health is a big thing, mostly from your members. And I've signed on to some, admittedly, because I thought they were good ideas, and I wanted to help you track the money somewhere. I don't know if I have a question, but I'm just going to tell you that pretty surprised. You know, the people had bad things to say about me last year, and like I didn't care, and I cared a ton, and not people in this room, but it was a really, really hard time. So I just wanted to make you know what you got into. Carlson, maybe you can tell me if you have some ideas about how you're going to, maybe there really isn't a hole, maybe you have some fees or some funding streams you're going to get to backfill some of this. Did you have something specific you can tell me that you're going to take MCHA or some surcharges, or do you have some plan in mind
that I can tell people? Mr. Chairman, I would answer that in a general way, and the way I would answer it for each and every one of the items in the budget resolution is that committees will have the responsibilities to, or the responsibility to reach their target, whether it's health and human services or education, in terms of how they would decide that they would expend their funds or, in this case, make those reductions.
Yeah.
I would hope that As the committee works on that, now you're just hearing from a single member, but I would hope that they would protect the most vulnerable citizens of the state as they put the budget together.
Yeah. And Mr. Chair, and thanks. I mean, it's I didn't think I'd be in this role, you know, commenting about your target in this way. I thought for sure there'd be 100, 150 or something just in terms of that. So, but I just want to offer some advice to the majority as they govern here. MCHIP probably isn't a fungible source of money. We're going to get rid of it. But if you capture it, it's going to be another tax on top of the 3.5% I tried to help you get rid of in the exchange, which goes directly against small business and fully insured. So if that's something you're thinking of, there's $160 million there in the revenue stream, but it's on tiny businesses and individuals who are already going to be languishing under some of the ACA changes, which are going to be upwards of 20% on their premium rate. So I suggest you don't do that. And surcharges, Governor Pointy proposed some. There was some in the Governor Dayton's original budget. The most you can get and even be surviving it is $100 million. But there's winners and losers, and there's going to be some very loud complaining hospitals about some of the money you'll be taking out of those, and I'm not sure. So that'd be kind of a hospital tax, I guess. So, but I just wanted you to know, and I hope I'm being polite, but I didn't understand the nuance of this funding until I had to be the chair of it. And I sat on the committee 12 years, and I got to know it quite intimately. And this is not a small number. It's not a number people were expecting. And if you could go back in your caucus and get a different number for this, that would be kind of nice. So in the Senate, they have $88 million for the courts. And so I'm glad the judges are going to get a raise. And the PCAs making 10 bucks aren't going to be getting one. So I just wanted to... Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know if that's just maybe a comment. So I'm going to go upstairs. So thank you.
Representative Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Chair Carlson, I'm looking at the transportation portion of the bill, which is kind of my responsibility, I guess. Upstairs in room 10, there's a couple hundred people demanding a lot more than this. I remember I had a paltry cut last year that looked something like this and was excoriated vociferously for throwing... people who needed transit services into the street. So I'm here to help you with it. Good luck with it. But my question actually is this target that we're looking at for general fund, as we sit here upstairs, Representative Earhart has a bill with several hundred million dollars in new taxes to support mass transit and so on. Is that included in this number, or if we adopt that, will he be allowed to increase spending in this proposed target, or can kind of give me an idea how that would work should those taxes pass?
Mr. Chairman, no, that's not included in this number, but I think it's fair to say that we're very aware that there are other bills in the process dealing with transportation. I can't predict what the outcome of some of those will be, but as you well know, there's the governor's proposal for transit. There's the bill that Representative Earhart has been working on, and we'll have to see what the Transportation Committee comes up with, and then much of what they're proposing would ultimately have to go through Chair Lencheski's committee as well if those were acted upon. So we would cross that bridge in this committee after transportation would act and after taxes would act, and I can't predict what the outcome of that would be. I just know there's a lot in the pipeline right now.
So, Mr. Chair, Chair Carlson, so I would assume then that we would, if we were to adopt these tonight, we probably will. Should some of those taxes become reality, then we would do an amendment to this? Will that be the procedure?
Well, if the procedure, Mr. Chairman, the procedure, if there were circumstances that warranted a change in the resolution, it would be amended, and that has been done in the past under both parties' control. So... we would need to cross that bridge when we get there. So all I can really say at this point, I know that the Transportation Committee is working on a variety of issues.
Thank you.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Carlson, the $23 million bump in environment agriculture, does that have anything to do with the movement of PILT from the tax area to the environment area?
Mr. Chairman, as I mentioned, you know, these are targets that are set for the various committees, and those are decisions that would be made within the committees as long as they meet their target.
Mr. Marks?
Mr. Chair and Representative McNamara, just to clarify a little bit, the PILT amount is included in the environment and agriculture area in both the base and in the target. So to the extent The $23 million, to the extent PILT is in there, would be whether there's an increase or decrease in PILT, which I'm not commenting on, but just it's in both the base and the target number, so it's a comparable comparison there.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Marks, that was my question. So thank you for getting to that. Then my question,
Mr. Chairman, I just checked with Mr. Marks, confirms what I was saying, though in the end that would be up to the committee as to how that would be expended. But
thank you,
as he pointed out, it's in the number.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The reason for my question is that amount is somewhat similar to what PILT's around a $20 million deal, so I was wondering, it didn't used to be in the Environment Committee, but Mr. Marks has clarified that it was in both the base. Representative Carlson, so would this $23 million, would that include, like we heard bills today and we've heard other bills for about a $10 million aquatic invasive species fee increase? Is that included in the $23 million? Is that fee increase in there?
Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, as I say, and it's true with all of these, in terms of what specifically will be finalized in any of these bills will be up to the action of those committees. I was chair of a finance committee for many years, and I always appreciated when I would get a target if I had the flexibility to put the bill together with the committee that I was chairing with myself and the various members, and that's my underlying philosophy with most of this. It's up to the committee. We set the targets as best we could. We consulted with a variety of, or I should say all the chairs who told us about their committee hearings and so on, so we had that input and we were setting the targets, but in the end when they reach that point of allocation, they'll have to decide what the disbursement of those funds are within that target. But we were generally aware of what their needs were as we were putting the numbers together.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll redirect my question then. It sounds like I should be asking Representative Wagenius. Representative Wagenius, does your target include the $10 million AIS supercharge fee we heard today? Is that in this target?
Representative Wagenius.
If you will remember, Representative McNamara, that bill was laid over in Representative Dill's committee. I do not see it as an alive bill.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the $23 million increase, the AIS fee, either that bill or the more modified DNR one that is around $5 million, would be added on to this if it happened?
Representative
Wagenius.
As far as I know, it would be added on with the big if that you just put on, but our committee has not had a chance to talk about that.
Representative McMahon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then Representative Wagenius, does this target of $23 million include the increased fees on mining, either the drill hole inspection fees in regards to the drill core library, or how about the almost $1 million increase in the taconite area for the mining activity fees? Are they included in the $23 million?
Representative Wagenius.
They would not be included in the 23. They are part of the governor's proposal to have the mining industry pay its own costs rather than to have the general taxpayer pay those costs.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so, Representative Wagenius, by the way you answered that, that would be added on to the $23 million then? Those fees are part of the $23 million, or if they're done, they would be in addition to the $23
million? Representative Wagenius.
Those fees are part of the governor's proposal, and what the governor is proposing to do is to have the folks who are benefiting for those permits pay for the costs of those permits rather than having the general taxpayer pay for the costs of those permits.
Representative Carlson, you want to
maybe I can help a bit here, if I may. You know, the budget resolution deals with the general fund. As I listened to the discussion, Representative McNamara, and when you begin to talk about the fees and so on, you know, we're talking here about the target that we're setting for the general fund, so the fees would be a separate issue.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Carlson, when you say a separate issue, you mean in addition to.
Maybe I could have Mr. Chairman, Mr. Marks.
Would you like to clarify?
Mr. Chair, Representative McNamara, members, and I actually don't know if those are, if the governor's proposal there is general fund or not. This is the general fund target, so to the extent it's, those would be general fund, they would fit within this. If they're not general fund, the resolution doesn't affect them. But the other thing to remember is that the targets, again, are spending plus or minus revenue change. So if there's a proposal to bring in $1 million of revenue and spend that $1 million, $1 million of revenue to the general fund and then spend it, that essentially nets out to zero within the target. It increases spending $1 million, it increases revenue, and those two net to zero within the target. So, I'm not quite sure if these are general fund or if they're not general fund, the specific ones you're discussing.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Marks, thank you for that clarification, but that just, I'm trying to accentuate my point that not only are we talking about $23 million, but we could be talking about 10 or 20 more dollars, million more dollars of increased cost to the taxpayers of the state of Minnesota that are hidden in this budget, and I'm just trying to find out what's hidden here. Representative Lagunias has certainly talked about the positive impact of hitting up the taconite industry for $1 million because she's alluded they don't pay their fair share now, and so I respect that opinion, but I'm wondering, are there other ones? How about the product stewardship, the paint tax, the carpet tax? So those are not in here. They would be in addition to this, so that would be additional money that would come into our budget area.
Representative Lagunias.
First of all, let's separate out the mining. Currently, citizens are paying that cost right now. So my constituents and your constituents and Representative Ansel's constituents are paying with general fund money for some of the costs of running those programs. So instead of doing that, where the beneficiaries would pay the dollar. So that's that. The paint is not a bill that has passed. There is no fee that is counted at this point as far as I know. So those are very different. That would be new. The other is brand new. The other is old subsidies that may or may not go away.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Lagunias, we can have an honest discussion about whether we're actually recovering the fee or not, but I think clearly in the drill hole inspection fee structure that we've heard about, that's going to be a profit center for the DNR. And I would just allude to one that's easy to talk about because we just dealt with this last year. One of the proposals is for an AIS plant management fee increase. That's a complicated way of saying if you have a lakeshore homeowners group, which many of you have in your district, and if you have 100 lakeshore people and they want to, say, control milfoil, well, they got to have the DNR come out and ride around in their canoe, and they got to have two of them in case the one falls over. So that's understandable. And it takes about a half a day to come out to the lake and look around. And so they got to back charge, you know, $1,000 a day per person, half a day, so it costs you a grand. Well, they bump it up, and we got them. They justified $2,500 for us, for the 100 people, so they have to pay $2,500 to come out and deal with some milfoil, whether they're going to cut it with the machine or spray it or whatever the program is. Well, we're going to supercharge that one this year, assuming we've just been laying stuff over. We haven't really been voting yet, so one of them we laid over would be to charge that group $100 a pop or for 90 people, say, and Representative Anderson's Little Lake out in Plymouth, $9,000. Oh, and then we hit them $300 for another fee, so $9,300, have the DNR come out, whip around in the canoe a little bit, and we're going to say that fee is justified. So the $23 million in the environment may be what we see on paper, but I don't know how many more little $9,000 here for this lake association. Or I'm just glad I don't live up where there's a lot of lakes, because I don't know how many associations there is in like let's say, a representative of Ann's Elks District. You probably have a few lake associations that are dealing with some issues.
Mr.
Good luck.
Chairman,
thank you for the all the time, Mr. Chair. I appreciate it.
If I may, you know, I just like to remind the committee we're dealing with setting the targets for the general fund. And, you know, I don't think it serves much of a purpose tonight to get into the weeds of what will ultimately be done in the finance committee. Some of the questions that Representative McNamara is raising, they may be good questions, but they're questions that will be resolved in the Environmental Natural Resource Committee. I would hope that we could maybe address the question that's really before us with the targets for the general fund.
Representative Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, this is my first time on the Ways and Means Committee, so I'm just trying to get my head wrapped around the budget resolution and what the net spending is. And I'm so, you know, some of my questions may be a little elementary, and I apologize for that, but I'm trying to read through this and get a grasp of the larger budget picture. Chairman Carlson, can you tell me, and I'm looking also at the release that Speaker Thiessen sent out yesterday and looking at some of the numbers and trying to figure out where some of the things he indicated would be priorities are listed here, is the education shift payback that he referenced, is that reflected in any of the net spending numbers in education? Or I can't see where that is. Here, could you help me find that?
I'll ask Mr. Marks to address that in a moment, but I would point out that the repayment of the shift will be handled through the tax committee. Okay. That's where that funding is, and as far as the net number, it's at the bottom of the page there. That would be the $36,972,000. That's the net number that would be reflected in the proposed House budget. And I don't know if Mr. Marks has anything to add to that, but that's where that funding is. And I don't know if Chair Lencheski would like to add to that, being that it'll be carried in the tax bill or not.
Representative Lencheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Chair Carlson and Representative Loon. Yes, we're intending to fully pay back the school shift in the tax bill, and you're a member of that committee, so we'll all be working on that together. And I think the way to think about it is if you look at the tax number, you know, you can see the base number on the resolution of Representative Carlson. So the way to think about that number as you go across, the third column is just the difference between column one and two, but the second column is any internal spending in the bill plus the school shift, and then the committee adds the revenue for that. And so you have to back into that second column number to meet your target. So it would be fully contained within the tax committee.
Representative Loon.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Chair Lencheski. I appreciate that. So I understand the net spending does not reflect any revenues, additional revenues that may be raised in spending. So is there an overall spending, a gross spending number that has been established for the budget? I know it's not reflected here, but you know, I'm trying to get a sense of, is there an overall number for either a tax increase to meet these numbers, or is there some sense of that? Has that been announced or indicated anywhere to the committee chairs?
Representative Carlson.
And I didn't hear all of your question. I'm sorry. Could you repeat that?
Yes. Chairman Carlson, is there an overall gross spending number? Because as I understand it, the net spending is does not account for, if taxes are raised and then spent, that number is not accounted for in the net spending. Am I misunderstanding this?
I'll ask Mr. Marks to respond to that. It's not the total is not there, but if Bill Representative Marks.
Mr. Marks, and then, Representative Lencheski after that.
Mr. Chair and Representative Loon, the resolution doesn't limit the total spending. It's the net spending concept, and as the example on the sheet states and so on, there's the flexibility there that a spending offset by revenue is within that number. So there is not a total gross spending limit within the resolution.
Representative Lucheski.
Yes, maybe this will help clarify and a little bit more too, Representative Loon. So we just heard two previous chairs complain about the cuts in this set of targets, and let that be noted, there is a balanced approach, because you heard two former chairs just say they're too deep of cuts. So it's all the cuts and new spending going on within, and as you know, as the member of the tax committee, there's often spending within the tax bill as people come forward and want tax credits for different purposes or whatever it might be. So that all nets out together, and until the tax committee as a group decides what kind of revenue they're going to use to do some internal activity in the bill, let's say it's funding LGA, it's difficult to know until the committee does its work what the total amount of revenue will be.
Representative Luke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Chair Lucheski, and Chairman Carlson. I have a little better understanding here, but I guess I just, and part of this is my having worked in the federal system and the budget process, and I guess I view Ways and Means a little bit like the budget committee for the Minnesota House, rightly or wrongly. So I'm just, is there a targeted overall spending number, or is that completely fluid and fungible at this point?
Representative Carlson.
No. Mr. Chairman, that's what I thought Mr. Marks just explained. Yeah.
Okay. So we could, while the net spending is 36, we could actually be spending 40 billion or 45 billion, depending on revenues and other resources raised.
Mr. Chairman, when you use those kinds of numbers, I don't think that's the kind of end product we're going to have.
Representative Lewis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I'd settle for a ballpark, Representative Carlson, if there is one in mind.
This resolution deals with the general fund. As Representative Lucheski pointed out, there are decisions that are yet to be made within the tax committee. It's when you talk about overall funding, there may be some fees, but they would be very minimal, I think, in the end. That's our goal. The overall spending, I think, will end up probably being pretty close to the number that's before you.
Representative Lou?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Dean.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And Representative Carlson, when you sat down and talked with all your chairs and gave them your budget targets, one of the things that I recall was a vigorous discussion with all of the chairs about fees, and from 2 years ago. We have a lot of people in the caucus that are very apprehensive about raising fees and very protective of that, and Representative Holberg was very careful about, sitting them all down. And now there's no fees in there, is there? Because if there's any fees, I want to know what the fees are, and we're going to break them out. It was a very, very difficult discussion with many of the chairs from the committees. And is there any, have you had those discussions? Do you have those? I'm sure there's folks in your caucus that are keeping track of those on a separate tally. And what's basically the attitude and the appetite, and how are those going to get communicated?
Representative Dean, as I mentioned earlier, the budget resolution deals with the general fund and the fee question. I can say this, that I don't know if I'll have exactly the same kinds of discussions that Representative Holberg did, but as I mentioned a few moments ago, the goal is to keep fees to a minimum. There may be, as we go through the process, and the various committees are looking at some of the needs, there may be some fees that they might desire to increase, but they'll have to run those past us before we would sign off on any of those.
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Carlson. Needless to say, that's going to be an ongoing discussion that we're going to be having, and I'm sure that's not any surprise to you. And I just have two quick questions on the spreadsheet. Number one, on the capital investment number that you have, is that anticipated with no cash, or is that bonding only, or is that broken out in any way?
There is some cash. I'm asking Mr. Marks of what it is. It's overwhelmingly, as you might expect, Mr. Chairman, bonding, but there is a little cash in there.
Mr. Marks?
Mr. Chair, I can find the exact number. It's the governor has a recommendation for agency relocation related to the capital renovation. That's the cash that's built into the bonding bill. And I believe it's about $2 million for 14-15.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Marks. Just looking at Health and Human Services on that 11.212 number with a minus 150 change, does that include within that any anticipated money from the proposed surcharges that we are hearing about? And if so, how much money is banked within that from the surcharges?
Representative Carlson.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, Representative Dean, again, how that committee or any other committee gets to that number will be decisions within the committee. I assume you're talking about hospital surcharges, or I'm not sure if there are others in that bill or not. I know in the past that has sometimes been looked to, but that's a question that the committee will ultimately have to come up with, is how they find that $150 million. I suspect some of that might mean some reallocations, some of that might be some reductions in expenditures, but our goal here isn't to write the bill for the Health and Human Service folks. That'll be their responsibility.
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Carlson. Obviously, if we're the $150 million, if that's indeed the scope or the anticipated scope, would be the net spending amount in many of the other the areas. So I'm hoping that they have a anticipation for that. I'm hoping that they're not planning on that within that number. And the other piece of that I'm thinking about is the balance in the health care access fund, which I'm looking at the February forecast as raising from $21 million up to $400 million in a projected balance. If that were to be used for any of the health care spending within that target, I'm anticipating that would not be a net impact on the general fund. Is that correct?
Representative Carlson.
I'll defer to Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chair and Representative Dean, if there's a transfer in of it from the Health Care Access Fund to the general fund, that within the number, that'd be treated as revenue or net a negative, and then it would offset the spending by the same amount. So a transfer in of $10 million, for example, is $10 million of revenue within that number.
Representative Dean.
And Mr. Chair and Mr. Marks, that is a way that we can, in effect, spend money without spending it out of the general fund. And that is a very large number that I just want to make members aware of before we go into the further discussions into the floor. I hope we get better guidance from the committee on the anticipated use, and also from the governor's attitude towards the use of those funds as we go forward.
Representative Holbert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a couple questions on the press release numbers yesterday and then the numbers in the resolution. In presenting to the public in the press yesterday, the number, everything was net except for taxes, and so you showed a positive 250 on a change from base. And in the resolution, which of course all has to be net, you show a negative 1.471882. I'm wondering the rationale for that and what the number justification for that is as well.
Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, as I mentioned earlier on those tax issues, Representative Lincheski will be able to respond to that number.
Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Carlson and Representative Holbert. I wasn't there, so I never saw the thing, but I can tell you what the 250 is. It's property tax relief. So the goal there is to do property tax relief for Minnesotans. So the way that would have to feed in is if you take that base number, column one, that's the $2.6 billion number, then spending within the bill would have to, that 250 would have to be in there. We're also going to pay back the school shift in there. Then you have to bring on the revenue on top of that, and you have to back in not to column number three, but to column number two to hit your target. Okay. So that 250 part is property tax relief, but we could, you know, we could do other things in there as well, too. I know there are, trust me, lots of members bipartisanly have lots of ideas of things we could do, so we'll be working on it.
Mr. Chair, I don't know if, you know, the number issue, I mean, I just don't understand when you went to the press and the public why you treated taxes different. Instead of showing them net number in all categories, you don't show the net in taxes.
Representative Lynch.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Holbert, because this sheet is net spending. So to hit the net spending target, you have to hit the 1187042. And Mr. Marks can correct me if I'm wrong, if I'm not describing it correctly.
Mr. Chair, I get what you're doing in the budget target. I get that. Okay. I've been there, done that. But when you have your press release and you go to the public and you stand in front of the press and you say, we are releasing our budget targets, and you have the, you know, the handy little talking points and the little charts and graphs and everything, why did you not have your tax story accurately reflect the budget target number that you have in front of the committee tonight? And what components did you not include that changed that number?
Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Holbert, you know, Representative Carlson can speak for himself in the tax area. You know, we haven't done our work. I mean, this is, it's sort of like debating the omnibus tax bill before we even tried to put it together here. But I think you can add them up and figure it out if you're trying to get to a number. I mean, 250 in property tax relief plus the school shift plus the spending. The difference is the tax committee can both repeal tax expenditures, it can raise revenue, it can cut, it has multiple opportunities before it. So let's say you take something in a tax expenditure, Job Z, pick that one, okay? We could repeal that. That raises money. That's different than showing a number that's got a net tax increase. So as Representative Davids knows, that the tax committee can has many choices before it to hit a target. And so we're not trying to be prescriptive on how we get there. But we did commit to $250 million of property tax relief and paying back the school shift. We can also do more cuts, and we've heard how some people already don't like the cuts, but they all have to back into that final number.
Representative Holbert.
Again, Mr. Chair and Chair Lincheski, I get that part of it. Can somebody tell me what number computations you used to make up the difference in the proposed House target that is presented here tonight, which is 1.187042, and what you presented to the press yesterday, which was 2.908924. What number sets were not included in the story to the press that make this number change here tonight?
Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wasn't at the press event. Honestly, I've not seen what you're referencing, but I was aware of the 250 number, so maybe Mr. Marks has a way to kind of think through the different spreadsheet, but I wasn't at that event, so I'm not sure what was presented there, so
Mr.
I
Marks.
Apologize for that.
And Mr. Chair, and Representative Lucheski, I was at the event and listened very carefully, and I cannot figure how the numbers are jimmy-rigged to make it sound good and so different than what we have here tonight.
Mr. Marks, did you want to comment?
Mr. Chair and members, I can the spreadsheet that was released was at the press conference or released with the press conference was that's the number that shows the $250 million increase in that property tax area. It doesn't include other changes, one of which has been mentioned is the education age shift.
And Mr. Chair, if I might, then what do we book for that?
It's March
854.
Mr. Chair and Representative Holberg, the sheet from the press conference also mentioned that the education shift would be $854.2
million. And then...
Representative Holberg.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, then we are still short almost $1 billion between the two numbers, between the number that was given to the press and the number that's here today.
Representative Lucheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that's the crux of the tax committee work. That's what it's about. That's what the tax committee has to decide. Does it want to raise revenue? Does it want to repeal things? You know, and what does it want to spend?
Oh. Representative Holberg.
Then what, Mr. Chair, if it's up to the tax committee's work, then what, how did you get this number that you gave to the press yesterday? I mean, did you just pull it out of the sky? I mean, there has to be some rationale for why the number was different that you told the press than what you have tonight.
It's not different.
I mean, you told the press under the, and albeit you didn't show the net, you didn't say net. On this press thing, every single column, you have the word net, except for taxes. So you, for the proposed house target for taxes is $2.9 billion in what you gave the press yesterday. Okay? Now we see, for the purposes of the budget resolution, the word net shows up, so now we're all talking apples to apples here, and the number here is 1.187. So I'm trying to figure out where the 1.7 billion dollar difference is. You've told me you think part of it is 8.854.
Representative
Lucheski. Well, Mr. Chair, I don't think part of it. It's a target to meet, just like every other committee has. They can, as Representative Wilgenius was saying, she has to get to her target. She has multiple ways to get there. It's not prescriptive. And I think, you know, if to say that there it's jimmy-rigged or something, I mean, I'm not participating in jimmy-rigging anything, so I'm not sure what that means. I hope you didn't mean that pejoratively. I don't think you did. So I'm not hearing those numbers as not matching up. It's a different way to present numbers. And I think if what folks are trying to say, you know, there's got to be some revenue in there, yes. I think the speaker, and again, I wasn't there, said our majority intends to ask the wealthiest Minnesotans who've received the largest benefit, pay the smallest percentage of their income in taxes, and all the data shows and our new tax incidence report shows that as we've come out of the recession, are doing better than everybody else, they should contribute in for a short term and to pay back the school shift. So I don't think we're dodging that there's going to be revenue here. I mean, I certainly hope people aren't trying to get that impression from us. We ran on that we'd have some revenue, some tax, and some cuts, and we've already heard that people don't like the cuts, and I'm sure people aren't going to like the revenue either, but... You know, we're going to get there. I'm not trying to play a game with it, so I hope you can respect that.
Okay.
Representative Holberg.
If I might, first of all, I don't think you're going to ask them. You're going to tell them that they're going to pay more taxes. But this 2.9 number that you gave to the press, is that your gross number in the tax area?
I wasn't there.
Representative Lucheski.
Mr. Chair, again, I wasn't there, and I don't have that sheet of paper. I'm sorry. I've not even seen it. I apologize.
Representative Holberg.
The speaker makes this decision, you know.
I get that, but maybe this is for Chair Carlson. He did the spreadsheet, or directed somebody to do a spreadsheet that ended up with this number here. What is it? What was included on the proposed house target number that's not in the budget target?
Representative Carlson or Mr. Marks?
Mr. Chair, the number, the $2.9 billion number is simply the base level of spending in the property tax aids and credits area plus $250 million that was discussed as additional spending in that particular area. That's the 2.908 million number that was in the handout yesterday.
Oh. Representative Holbert. Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Jess.
Okay, again, because I don't have that. I think I see what you're saying now. Sorry, I apologize. If you look at column one of what we do have here, 2.658924, if you add 250 for property tax relief, I think we get to the number you're saying. And I stand to be corrected, but I think that's what Mr. Marks just said. So 2.658.924 is the current law spending in the tax committee that falls on the spending side of the spreadsheet. And if you add 250 to property tax relief, you know, I count that as 2.908. So does that line up with the sheet you're looking at? Because I don't have it. Sounds like the same thing.
I think that's what they did.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I have the sheet here, and that's exactly what it has been described. Is that it? That's how you get there. It's the 250. House change from the base was at 250, and that was basically the number, as the speaker said yesterday at the press conference. That's the property tax relief. So that's the difference between the two numbers. I'm beginning to follow what your line of questioning was now as well.
All right, and I'm sorry that it took us so long to get here. My apologies for that. So I have another question, and there was testimony or talk yesterday at the press conference that there was a total of $2.4 billion in tax increases. Is that accurate?
Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, if I recall correctly, that was some quick math by one of the reporters, and the response was that was close. Permanent tax increase would represent, what was that number for the permanent tax increase? That was the 1.7. Yeah, the permanent tax increase is the 1.7, and as was pointed out a few moments ago, then you also have, in addition to that, the paying back of the shift. And that was, as was explained yesterday, the paying back of the shift would be a tax that would blink on and blink off for the highest income earners, was the way that was described. But again, that whole question of how the taxes are handled, as Chair Lincheski has repeatedly pointed out, will be up to the tax committee in terms of how they get there. But that's the way it was presented yesterday.
So, Mr. Chair, just
at the press conference.
Quick math, I think we're above 2.5, and as Representative Dean mentioned, he was probably nicer than I was about it. When we put our budgets together, there was absolutely no fee in our initial rounds of budgets. Well, I think at the very end, with negotiations with the governor, I think ultimately there were some fee increases. I know the invasive species, we had some fees in that area in the final calculations, but the net result of that is that these numbers, at least in our budget resolution, changed very little as far as total spending, given that there weren't other revenue raisers within these spending areas. And I'm curious, Chair Carlson, what direction your chairs have been given relative to fees.
Sam Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, as I mentioned earlier, the request is that the fees be at an absolute minimum, and if there are any fees increases, they're to run it by us before they would be implemented. We want to keep the fees to an absolute minimum. If there's a justification for a fee, Mr. Chairman, that would have to be brought before us. I don't know how you operate it, Mr. Chairman, but that's essentially the way we'll be looking at it.
Mr. Holbert. Chair, I was a little stricter than that, but anyway.
Well, maybe, Mr. Chairman, I'm engaging a little Minnesota nice, but
when necessary, I can say no.
Representative Holbert.
Thank you. And just one last question. Will there also be TAILS targets for the committees to meet?
Charles.
The House budget resolution doesn't set TAILS, but I can tell you it is in, we are in balance for 16 and 17.
And Mr. Chair, then, are those TAILS targets that you're willing to share with the minority, or?
We don't have them here. Yeah.
Well, Mr. Chair, you're.
But I can, Mr. Chairman, tell you that we are in balance in the out biennium, and we'll be monitoring the TAILS very closely, just as we will be the fees.
And Mr. Chair, if again, are you willing to share those targets that are in balance with the minority?
Representative Carlson.
With the out biennium, I think we can have that information. Do you have it? We'd have to put it together, but we can talk. Why don't we talk about that? I can say that clearly that when we were looking at the out biennium, that we were in balance. We can perhaps put that together for you, but we can talk about that later. We don't have that here with us tonight.
Right. All right. Thank you.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Chairman Carlson, to that point, so you'll use the fifth-tier income tax in the out biennium to balance the budget. That's still available. That would be a temporary tax for the next 2 years that could be used in the out biennium as needed. And because doesn't it generate, isn't it an increased tax in the hundreds of millions? Did I hear $800-900 million tax in the next 2 years? So you could just leave that on if you needed it to get the out biennium to balance?
Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, that will be sunsetted. It's going to be, and Carolyn Chesky may want to chime in on that one as well, but that is a temporary tax. It blinks on and it blinks off, and when the school shift is paid for, that blinks off, and it may, under the best of circumstances, we can't predict the future, but we will have in law as well that if revenue picks up as it did this last biennium and part of the school shift was paid off, that will be in place as well. And then the tax, as I understand it from the press conference yesterday, would perhaps even blink off earlier or even be reduced in amount. The goal is simply to pay back the school shift. And okay. I don't know if, Mr. Chairman, if Chair Lencheski wants to add to that or not.
Representative Lencheski, any comment?
I think that covered it.
Representative McNamara.
So thank you, Chair Carlson. So as you discussed, you have discussed this. This is your plan to do this. And it's when you enact it, the plan is that it would have a sunset date, that it would not go beyond the first biennium?
Mr. Chairman, that is the intent, that it's a temporary tax that blinks on and off, and it's only to pay back the school shift. And like I say, with the best of circumstances, it may even be paid off earlier than that, in which case the tax would blink off earlier.
So, Mr. Chair, if I...
Go ahead, Representative McNamara.
Thank you.
Representative Lencheski wanted to...
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So... it's a temporary tax that goes, currently we're at 7.85, and I think Chair Lencheski said these people pay the smallest percentage of tax. Well, I think that's interesting. Whenever I made more money in Minnesota, we had a progressive income tax, that the more you made, the more you paid. The federal income tax was progressive too. The more I made, the more I paid. So when I made a lot more money, I paid a lot more tax. So I'm still trying to figure out. Now, if you want to do this pretend math that sometimes you use where you don't count the federal tax because we don't want to count that one because it's so progressive, then we can pretend by using something somebody calls where we just count the Minnesota tax and property tax and sales tax that they pay a lower rate because we don't want to count the one that they pay a lot more on because that would be the true one of what they really pay. So these people that already pay the highest, the 7.85, we're going to put a temporary 50% tax on them for the next 2 years. Today is March 20th. We've got 2 feet of snow on the ground. These people are down in Naples for the last 4 or 5 months, and they're saying, why would I come home? Why don't I stay here for 6 months and a day and enjoy this nice weather. They're going to tax the snot out of me when I get back in Minnesota anyway. So I think it'll be interesting when we come back in 2 years and you find out that the people you thought you were going to be able to get so much money from said, forget it. They're already moving away. Now more of them are going to move away. You've already talked about doing this. We set you up with a good spot. You didn't need to do this. This is a wrong plan. We handed it right to you. It's a nice, simple budget, $600 million. And now we're going to chase the people that are making the money here, creating the jobs, and send them away, and you already got a plan, but it's only going to be temporary.
Representative Lucheski.
Mr. Chair and Representative Carlson, I know we're far afield from the targets, but if you will permit me, Mr. Chair, I feel like I need to respond to a lot of things. Somehow, somebody seems to know what's in the tax bill. It's not me. But watching people say things, it's this people, it's this long, it's at this rate, it's this percent. That's the work of the tax committee. None of that's determined, so I think it needs to be on the record that, you know, the tax committee has to work on that. And I understand that folks on your side of the aisle, Representative McNamara, don't want to vote to raise taxes, and you don't have to. You can vote no. You don't have to pay back the schools. You don't have to pay back the deficit. And that's okay. But to say that, you know, we handed it to you, we left it in great shape, really, because the tobacco endowment was used, school shift was used again, we've done it too. There were fees raised, and the 10-year history around here is that we really haven't raised any revenue. We've raised the cigarette tax once. That's it. We've mostly cut, and I will tell you the current majority cut more than the last time majority. We took the big cuts last time we were in the majority. We didn't like it. We fought with Governor Plenty. We lost, and we voted for his cuts while the minority looked on. So we did pass the cuts, and we know what it's like. We've done it all. But, you know, I'm not trying to be, you know, too political here, but it's like we're debating the tax bill, and we're just setting targets. So I do want to say, you know, we're willing to honor our commitments, even if it means that we may not get the next election result we want. But we said we'd have a balanced approach, and we do have cuts, as you've heard, and people don't like them already. And we are going to raise revenue, and people don't like that either. But we're going to have a gimmickless budget. And I should amend one thing that Representative Carlson said is, you know, my intent, because the tax committee does have work to do, isn't just to pay back the school shift. I hope we pay back some other shifts. Representative Davids knows what they are. Representative Loon knows what they are. There are other people in this room who know we have a lot more gimmicks than the old school shift in there. We're doing business shifts and gimmicks that the last majority didn't pay back and the majority before. So, I mean, we can kind of have this big rhetorical fight right here and now, but to not respond to sort of we left it great for you and everything's wonderful, I mean, you know, I wish that tobacco endowment wasn't sold. I wish we didn't do appropriation bonds. And it isn't pleasant to cut, but I've done plenty of that. And it's not pleasant to raise revenue either, and I've done plenty of that too. But the gimmicks are over, and it's time to stop having the gimmicks in the budgets, and it's time to pay back the schools, and that, you know, from our point of view, we stand ready to hear how the minority will deal with the shift and the deficit, and those two alone are $1.4 billion, and please introduce your $1.4 billion in cuts, and we'll consider them. But we've already put some cuts on the table, and two previous chairs didn't like them. So I think, you know, I just hope we can understand that, you know, when you govern, you have different roles, and you've done it yourself, Representative McNamara, and you've worked really hard to do the best you could with your targets and with your caucus, and that's what we're doing here, too. We have a different philosophy, and it's just a different approach. But I don't want to leave it on the tape that somehow we've decided what all these things are going to look like in the tax bill. So I hope that the, you know, 25% of the legislature serves on the tax committee. And I hope that everybody else who doesn't, Representative Graniskowski is here as well, comes to the tax committee and listens if they're that intrigued by what the tax committee is going to do. So, yes, we're going to raise some revenue and we're going to do some cuts.
And Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, as I, by the way, Representative Lucheski makes a good point. There's a tendency to refer to the school shift because that's the biggest one there, but there are other issues that need to be addressed. But as I said earlier when we were talking about the environmental natural resource, our role here as the Ways and Means Committee is not to get into the weeds of the various finance committees and the tax committee, these are the targets. These are the targets for the general fund, and it'll be the work of those committees that will ultimately put the tax bill together in Rep. Semlencheski's case, and we have the tax, the property tax, local tax division as well. And then the other finance committees will be putting their budgets together within these targets. So I would appreciate it if we would kind of stay on the budget resolution and leave it up to the committees, not just the committee chairs who are here, but they're going to be working with their committees, both sides of the aisle, when they put those bills together. And I would just remind people that, you know, there were certain goals that we had, and some of those terms have been used here tonight, a balanced approach. That was the way we approached the budget. We wanted to have a stable budget with no gimmicks, and that's the goal that we achieved with this, with these targets. We did put a high priority on education. That will be the Education Committee's decisions in terms of how they will prioritize those expenditures. We wanted to have property tax relief, and we did have a discussion here a few moments ago at getting an understanding of that number and how that came about, but it was basically because that's a separate division, we wanted to show that $250 million in property tax relief. But in the end, it'll be up to that division to determine how they expend that $250 million. But we did want to provide for property tax relief because that's been a huge increase in the past few years. We also, there's a major increase in the budget resolution here in the jobs category, two bills, DEED, as well as the capital investment target that was set as well. Two major areas that will be job creators, along with investing in our workforce so that we do have a quality workforce available for our citizens and the businesses of the state. So if there are no further questions, Mr. Chairman, oh, there is, okay.
I just
would hope
sure
that we could stay with the...
Were you done? Okank. Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and to Chair Carlson. In this all-tax proposal budget resolution, we have a third tier. We know it's at 7.85 unless the Tax Committee would change that. From what I've been reading and in your calculations, a fourth tier looks like a 2%. Then we're looking at a temporary fifth tier. In your numbers, how did you calculate the temporary fifth tier? What percentage would that be, Mr. Chairman? Chair Carlson.
Well, Representative Carlson, I see Representative Lucheski wants to weigh on that. Representative Lucheski.
Heard that number, but I don't recall what it was.
Representative Lucheski.
Mr. Chair, if I may, Representative Davids, I don't know where you got this 2%. I mean, can someone tell me who knows what the Tax Committee is doing? Because I just heard Representative Davids say, well, the fourth tier would be another 2%. Where is that coming from? Please, just like... Clearly, there's some member of the House Democrats have released some tax plan that I have not read about, and I want to find them. So maybe Representative Davis can just tell me.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and to Chair Carlson. What now to get to your numbers in your all-tax budget resolution? What did you use for a fourth and fifth tier to arrive at the numbers? I know that. Then we will have the numbers in the tax committee, but we have numbers before us. I want to know where that money's coming from. What you must have some calculation. I think in the paper today it said 2% for a fourth tier, but I think that was the governor's. I think those were the governor's numbers. But in the calculations in this all tax budget resolution proposal, to get the money in, to get to your numbers, we currently have the third tier at 7.85. To raise the numbers that you want to raise, what did you do? What were your numbers for the fourth and fifth tier? And I know that will be determined by the tax committee, but somebody someplace to get to these numbers raise the revenue somewhere. And I know we'll determine that in Chair Lanchesky's committee, but how did you calculate to come up with your numbers? You must have had some idea what a fourth and a fifth tier were. I know the governor's proposed a 2% fourth tier. Now you're coming with a fifth tier that's temporary. Maybe the question, Mr. Chairman, is to Mr. Marks. What kind of numbers would we need to get to the numbers we have here? What would we have to do for a fourth and fifth tier to get there?
Representative Carlson, you first.
Mr. Chairman, you know, I don't know how much clearer Chair Lencheski and I can be, but those are decisions, and in fact, Representative Davids answered your own question. You said, you know, it's going to be up to the Tax Committee to make those decisions, and in your question, you answered your own question. We have said repeatedly with all of these targets that it will be up to the committees to achieve those goals. So,
well, Mr. Chair,
no, I can't answer the question anymore beyond that. We know how much we have to raise, for example, Mr. Chairman, with the school shift, and what the Tax Committee comes up with in terms of that. We've said that will be a temporary tax, but the exact percentages and so on will be, that will be up to the Tax Committee to work that out.
Well, Mr. Chair, in the all-tax proposal budget resolution, I'd ask this question to Mr. Marks. We know at this point the third tier 7.85. If we make the assumption, and I'm just making an assumption here, that the fourth would be 2% to get to our final numbers, what would a fifth tier have to be?
Mr. Chair, Representative Davids, I don't know. I don't have that information.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, to this point.
Holbert, to this point.
Yeah, to this point. I mean, I'm looking at the press release, and it says that under this budget framework, Minnesota schools would be fully paid back this budget cycle through a temporary income tax surcharge on Minnesotans who earn more than $5,000 per year. $500,000 per year. That scared you. Even the other side of the table got scared of that one, right?
Mr. Chairman, less than 1% I did the same thing when I was dealing with billions and millions. So
less than 1% of all Minnesotans. The surcharge would blink off once Minnesota schools are paid off, which would occur in two years or sooner. So this is like kind of a fourth grade math word problem. You know how much you have to raise, the $854.2 million. You know how many taxpayers are at the above $500,000 per year. So you know how much you have to raise. You know how many taxpayers are at that rate. You should be able to back into an income tax rate to meet that number. So I don't know why we don't have a number. That's what
Representative Lencheski.
Mr. Chair, hey, there's many ways to do that. That's the answer. And the people who serve on taxes can on the other side of the aisle, can walk you through multiple ways to do that. That's why it's not prescriptive. We have lots of levers, income levels, rates, all kinds of things are going on.
But Mr. Chair, if I might.
Holbert.
This statement shows the income level, more than $500,000 a year.
It could be $600,000, $700,000, many ways to do it. Just over $500,000. That's right.
And Holbert.
And that it would blink off within 2 years. So you know how much money you have to raise, and you know what your period of time to raise it.
Representative Lencheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I won't answer again because I think this is just a rhetorical argument. I'm sure Representative Davids could give you five different ways to do that in the next half hour.
And he's next, Representative Davids.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Holbert makes a very good point, and I would respectfully disagree with the tax chair. It's very prescriptive from the press release that I read. It said it's over $500,000. I didn't see the... It was $500,000 or over, from what I remember reading. So I think it's very prescriptive, and I think we should be able to get some numbers on the folks over $500,000. How much are they going to get dinged to make the $800 million? That's the question.
Any other member comments, questions, concerns? Seeing none, Representative Carlson, do you care to renew your motion?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I would renew my motion that we adopt CSRES 04, the resolution.
All right. All in favor of the Carlson motion, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, no?
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you. Representative
that's,
Carlson?
All the business we had tonight, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, members. The meeting is adjourned.
Good morning.